It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including site of proposed 50th Street apartment complex sold, Phoenix likely to require stores to mind their carts, Ahwatukee resident cooks up new dining concept, bread-making nonprofit needs volunteer bakers, and Pioneer Ahwatukee Church marks 50 years. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Site of proposed 50th Street apartment complex sold by Paul Mariniak. A luxury home and apartment developer has bought the site for a proposed 417 apartment complex on 50th Street between Ray Road and Chandler Boulevard, 2 years after the project won approval from Phoenix City Council. TB Street, a subsidiary of Toll Brothers, last month paid $15.55 million for the two nearly deserted two-building office complex and the 14-acre parcel it sits on near Thistle Landing Drive, according to commercial real estate tracker Vizda.com. The sale price equaled about $106 per square foot. The land and the two-story buildings totaled 146,000 square feet and built in 2001, were purchased from Everest Holdings. 2 years ago, Everest and P.B. Bell won approval for rezoning the land from office to multifamily following a 6-2 vote by the Ahwatukee Foothills Village Planning Committee and unanimous decisions by the City Planning Commission and the Council. While the zoning will remain unless Toll Brothers seeks a reclassification, it's unclear whether the luxury home builder will stick with the original plan for a 417-unit apartment complex on the property. Everest and P.B. Bell had planned to build 4 three-story surrounding 2 four-story buildings with mostly 1 and 2 bedroom units. The two buildings would be built around a pool and 1,200-square-foot clubhouse, according to Everest. Other amenities they plan include a dog park, outdoor barbecue area, fire pit, and a gathering ramada. Given the property's prime location near major employers along Interstate 10 and its proximity to numerous dining, entertainment, and retail options along Ray Road, we feel this is well suited to accommodate additional housing opportunities to support these uses and continued growth in the area, Everest and P.B. Bell told city planners at the time. They predicted the complex would stimulate the nearby retail area and address a critical housing shortage in the valley, but some neighboring homeowners opposed the project, claiming it would worsen traffic in an already heavily congested area. The developers said their traffic study determined the complex would only add about 215 vehicle trips to the morning and evening rush hours, even though the complex will have more than 700 parking spaces. The neighbors' concerns about traffic were heightened by developer Via West's construction of a massive three-building light industrial complex on 50th Street, not far from the apartment complex site. Via West built that complex on 28 acres it leased from Kyrene School District for 75 years in a deal that could generate close to $100 million for the district. City planners voiced approval for the project, stating in a review, "The project will redevelop an underutilized property and provide a high-quality multifamily residential development which is consistent with the surrounding land uses. The proposal will allow for additional housing opportunities in the village and will help alleviate the housing crisis." That was site of proposed 50th Street apartment complex sold. Our next article, Phoenix likely to require stores to mind their carts. Also by Paul Mariniak. Phoenix is on the verge of requiring retailers to install locking wheels and even GPS devices on shopping carts, so they don't end up being abandoned in residential neighborhoods or on other commercial properties. The Economic Development and Housing Subcommittee last week tentatively approved for the full council's adoption in ordinance specifying what retailers must do to reduce the number of shopping carts outside retail premises. In the fiscal year that ended last June 30th, the city rounded up 7,851 carts from over 460 retail stores, according to a report. One Winco store lost track of 262 carts, the highest for any one store, while a Walmart ranked second with 131 missing carts. While the average number of carts collected from any one store was about 16, and the median was 4, 12 retailers exceeded 20 carts collected per store over the course of a year, the report stated. City staff recommended the focus be on large retailers, while smaller stores would be required to file a shopping cart compliance plan that spells out how they will prevent carts from straying from their premises. That plan also must show weekly retrieval services stores will use to round up those carts that are abandoned off-site. Neighborhood Services Director Spencer Self, an assistant director, Anna Maria Ortega, laid out the city's plan, which now goes before the full council for a vote. They said staff has been working with the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance, the Arizona Retail Association, and other lobbying groups, although their information was far from complete. While they did provide some information, such as a partial list of stores using lock mechanisms, they did not have data on the efficacy of their systems, nor the maintenance of their systems, Self told the panel. However, they did share concerns about taking a single solution approach to the problem, and their appreciation for having an opportunity for an open dialogue about potential solutions. Under the proposed ordinance, all large retailers with over 50,000 square feet of shopping space would be required to have locking mechanisms that prevent a cart from being wheeled off the store lot. We are recommending offering an alternative that would require a shopping cart compliance plan made up of two sections, Self said. The first would be how they intend to prevent the removal of the carts from their premises, and the second is how they will ensure timely return of shopping carts. If they did not have a locking wheel system, they would be required to have a shopping cart retrieval contract. Self said, the city's plan allows retailers broad discretion, but still holds them accountable for keeping track of their carts, which cost a retailer an average of $300 each. Stores with less than 50,000 square feet of space would be required to file semi-annual reports, and if we collect more than 10 carts during the six-month review, the retailer would be required to implement a shopping cart compliance plan if they don't have one, he added. If the city has found at least 10 carts a year over a three-year period, the retailer would be required to not only have a contract with a vendor for their retrieval, but would also have to install GPS devices to ensure the carts weren't taken off their premises during hours when they're closed. Self noted that existing city ordinances give the city latitude on filing citations against non-compliant stores that carry fines. He also said city residents should report abandoned carts in their neighborhood by going to phoenix.gov/myphx311. Stating the vast majority of carts are reported by the community, Self said that after receiving a complaint, a contracted vendor will go out to retrieve it. He also said that will start staff conversations with retailers, mainly focused on wheel locks. There are quite a few retailers who are exploring and are starting to use GPS systems, although that technology is just emerging in the retail scene. Asked about the city's ability to monitor compliance with the ordinance, Self said, "The beauty of this plan is that review component, within 6 months, will know whether or not that's working, and then they'll have to make improvements. If they're one of our worst offenders and they don't try to get that under control within a year and a half, they'll be at our mandatory interim plan and they'll have to follow all the requirements. That would include mandatory GPS installs and a hiring company to round up stray carts." Vice Mayor Ann O'Brien said retailers told her that they go and retrieve abandoned carts when they're notified about them and wondered if the city requires stores to sue a particular company. Self said that while a couple years ago there was only one game in town, over the last year or so we have seen some new players move into that space. That proliferation of new retrieval companies has made it more difficult to track what stores have a retrieval contract, though he added the new ordinance would help address that issue. Self also stressed, "What's important about each store being registered is that we need specific information about that store, including who to communicate with." "Our intent would be to make it as simple as possible," Self said. "We're not looking to create a huge bureaucratic mess to solve a simple solution to a simple problem. We really do work with that to make it as easy as possible to get the information we need," O'Brien said. "I'm excited to see us getting closer to the finish line." But she added that it is important not to create too much of an administrative burden on our retailers in that registration process. That was Phoenix likely to require stores to mine their carts. Our next article, "A Ahwatukee Resident Cooks Up New Dining Concept," by Jerry Capel. A former owner of Biscuits Foothills has started a new stage in his life and on the Ahwatukee Foothills culinary scene with a new restaurant called Da Kitchen Grill. "This restaurant is my passion," said Charles Stewart. "Da Kitchen is the theme of the food, the feel. When I think of the kitchen, I think of my grandmother, how she used to cook on the wood stove." Stewart is a longtime Ahwatukee resident. He lived here since 1996 and opened the Biscuits on Chandler Boulevard in 2020 with his then-wife Erica Stewart, who still owns it. He also owned Cactus Jack's on East Elliott Road from 1998 to 2000. When the couple divorced, Stewart embarked on creating his own restaurant with his own vision. It's on East Warner Road, just east of South 48th Street, in a space that used to house Trattoria D'Amico, which closed in December of 2020, and Ruffino Italian Cuisine for more than two decades before that. Due to city inspections and bureaucracy, it took longer than expected to open the doors, but Da Kitchen Grill began serving breakfast and lunch 5 days a week on March 21st. In May, it will start serving dinner and have a full bar. Stewart is blending old Ahwatukee with new ideas in this venture. The restaurant's location will be familiar to anyone who's lived in Ahwatukee for more than a few years. Stewart said he used to go to Ruffino and wants to bring back the nostalgia of its low-key, sophisticated dinner experience, but with home-style comfort cooking and a brighter ambiance. The space was previously dark, cramped and outdated. Now, windows let in natural light, and tables are generously spaced. It seats 150, and large parties can be accommodated, although there's no private room. To helm the kitchen, Stewart hired Chef Juan Jose Padilla, who helped start the Biscuits on East Elliott Road west of South 48th Street many years ago. But Stewart came up with the recipe ideas. The Louisiana native drew inspiration from his southern roots, but mixed in Italian, Southwest, Asian, and more. The breakfast menu includes shrimp and grits, and biscuits and gravy, but also huevos rancheros, a carnitas omelet, and standard such as eggs benedict and steak and eggs. For lunch, look for burgers and sandwiches along with shareable plates of shrimp ceviche, Louisiana-style wings, and calamari. Most prices are around the mid-teens, and manager Rayana Old said the grits were a big draw immediately. "A few of my tables have come in specifically for the grits," she noted. "They never have left disappointed." Dinner entrees will include ribeye, prime rib, chicken marsala, lasagna, mussels, lobster bisque, a Cajun plate, gumbo, crawfish, creole, fry bread, orange chicken, and quesadillas, among others. Daily specials will also be offered. Prices will range from $13.99 to $25.99. Kids' meals are $6.99 to $8.99. With few exceptions, the dishes, including the batter for pancakes, waffles, and other items, are made from scratch. "We make our own batter for chicken tenders like my grandma used to do in the kitchen," Stewart noted, adding that the calamari is also fresh, not frozen, and battered by hand. Lydia Coalition of Ahwatukee tried Da Kitchen Grill the first weekend it opened and praised the food. "The big hits for the table were the pancakes and southwestern omelet," she said. "It was one large pancake and it was fluffy, warm, delicious." She added that a friend who ate the omelet said it had the perfect level of spice. Stewart said when he and his wife split, he knew he wanted to open more restaurants, but he wouldn't use the name Biscuits. I wanted to bring something besides breakfast, he said. He observed the proliferation of daytime-only restaurants throughout Ahwatukee, but didn't see many places that offered a quiet, mellow dinner ambiance without bombarding patrons with loud music and tons of video screens blaring sports. Even though Stewart plans to showcase live entertainment during dinner, he said he'll only offer soft music. He wants customers to have conversations and enjoy family time. We are a restaurant and lounge, not a bar, explained Stewart. Family is big for Stewart. Photos of his family adorn the walls throughout the space. He has 3 grown daughters, 2 granddaughters, a grandson, and a great-grandson. Stewart also prides himself on the friendly service inspired by Southern hospitality. When he's on the road for his other job, driving a truck, he knows manager Olds and her sister, Elise Bradley, the assistant manager, bring the same energy to his enterprise as he would. I felt something different than I have from any other job I've worked, Olds said. Charles is very involved with everything that goes on here. His passion for it is really what brought me in. Coalition said she'll be back because she liked the welcoming atmosphere. It just felt like a nice, homey local place rather than walking into a chain, she said. We've got great chains here, but I think it's going to be the people who will make the place. That was Ahwatukee Resident Cooks Up New Dining Concept. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Bread-making nonprofit needs volunteer bakers, by Ken Sane. Rise and Shine Bread, a volunteer organization that bakes bread for Tempe charities to help the food insecure, is looking for more volunteer bakers. Currently, the organization provides 250 individual loaves a week to Tempe Community Action Agency Food Distribution Center. Bakers are asked to volunteer 1 to 4 times per month using the organization's website to sign up at riseandshinebread.org. The website includes videos about the project and an instructional video on how to bake the bread. Volunteers get a standardized recipe for honey oat wheat bread along with bread bags, ties, and labels. Each recipe makes 12 mini loaves. Volunteers purchase their own ingredients and equipment, but there is a fund to defray the cost if a baker needs assistance. Financial donations can be made at its website as well. We've been called the Bread Angels and hope to continue to help our neighbors, said founder Andrea White, who along with Karen Mache recently received the Don Carlos Impact Award. Whether baking alone, at home, or in a group, our bakers feel good about making a difference in our community. Each day, Monday through Friday, TCAA prepares 50 bags with a loaf of the bread, peanut butter or tuna fish, a piece of fruit and a bottle of water, and pass it out to those in need. For some, this is the only opportunity to have a balanced and nutritious meal they can eat any time. The response from staff and clients has been great. Everyone likes the bread, and the mini loaves are perfect for our homeless population, said Casey Hopkins, food pantry manager for the Tempe Community Action Agency. Modeled after similar projects in other communities, Rise and Shine Bread recognizes the prevalence of bread in all cultures. Working with Rio Salado Cafe, a recipe was developed that includes only bread flour, whole wheat flour, oil, oatmeal, yeast, honey, and salt. Founded in 2021, Rise and Shine Bread has provided more than 18,000 mini loaves for distribution in Tempe, Mesa, and Chandler. That was Bread-Making Nonprofit Needs Volunteer Bakers. Our next article, Pioneer Ahwatukee Church Marks 50 Years, by Paul Mariniak. One of Ahwatukee's foundational institutions marked a half century this year. Last weekend was a weekend when the congregation of Mountain View Lutheran Church celebrated a rich legacy of community service that began in 1975, when the late Reverend Ken Johnson began worship services in Kyrene School on the site of what is now Kyrene School District's headquarters. By all accounts, Johnson saw an opportunity. He had been a pastor in Beaverton, Oregon, when he was asked by the Lutheran Church of America to become a mission developer in either Ahwatukee or Scottsdale. He looked at the two of them and decided there was more potential for growth in Ahwatukee, said Mountain View pastor Douglas Dill. Turned out, he was right. So, in August of 1974, Johnson packed up his wife, the late Arlene Johnson, daughter Pam, then 15, and sons Greg, 13, and 7-year-old Jeff, and began what has become one of Ahwatukee's most enduring and impactful institutions. At the time, Ahwatukee was home to only a few hundred households, a golf course, the Ahwatukee Recreation Center, and a construction equipment storage facility. Those were lonely days for Johnson's oldest daughter, Pam, one of only a few teenagers in Ahwatukee, wrote Marty Gibson, who has penned two books on Ahwatukee's history. At Tempe High School, her classmates laughed at the new community's name, which most had trouble pronouncing, he wrote in a 2015 column in AFN, marking the church's 40th anniversary. Son Jeff Johnson remembers those days well. He knocked on every door in Ahwatukee at least once, the Tempe resident said of his father. People in general were very excited to have a church coming to Ahwatukee. After only 3 months, we were able to hold the first service in our home on Thanksgiving Eve. We were one of the first 25 families in Ahwatukee. Pastor Johnson was determined to find a permanent home for the fledgling church west of I-10, and in December of 1977, Mountain View Lutheran's first building on 48th Street just south of Elliott Road was christened in December of 1977. The Lutheran Church of America Synod bought the land, Jeff recalled. My dad worked and fought with Dan Virksa for the land as he insisted on the visibility that 48th Street and Elliott provided. Virksa was president of Presley Development Company of Arizona, which founded Ahwatukee. That visibility Johnson fought for has evolved into a church campus that became home to Ahwatukee's oldest preschool and has become a hub for religious and secular activities of all kinds, from worship services to a Boy Scout meeting place. Johnson fervently believed that Mountain View should serve the community, so all were welcome, Gibson wrote. Sunday services brought many non-Lutherans into the fold, grateful for the opportunity to attend Ahwatukee's first church of any kind. Mountain View's doors opened to the community with as many as 40 different groups, ranging from Boy Scouts to adult daycare, making the church's facilities their own. And that visibility grew after Johnson resigned in 1979 to become assistant to the Bishop of the Pacific Southwest Synod, and the late Reverend Don Schneider replaced him as Mountain View's pastor the following year. Schneider had a golden touch when it came to fundraising and strengthening Mountain View's prominence. During what became the longest tenure of any Mountain View pastor, Schneider helped pressure the city of Phoenix to establish Ahwatukee's first ball fields with the creation of Mountain View Park and later Pecos Community Center. He helped save the Ahwatukee Easter Parade, which had been started by the now defunct Ahwatukee JCs in 1979 and was on life support until the Kiwanis Club of Ahwatukee, of which he was a charter member, rescued it. Schneider also helped start the still-enduring helicopter arrival that Millie's Hallmark continues to present in Ahwatukee Plaza the day after Thanksgiving. Indeed, Schneider played Santa for the first 12 years of that tradition. That guy was everywhere, former Phoenix Council member Sal DeCiccio recalled when the pastor passed away in 2018. I don't think there was a thing he wasn't involved in. Pastor Don and Clay Shad, the late founder of AFN, that has been accomplished today. That included Ahwatukee's first senior center, which later moved to the Pecos Community Center that Schneider lobbied City Hall for, along with the Ahwatukee Preschool and the Senior Center. Schneider created the Widowed Person Ministry, the parish nurse program, and many other ministries. He allowed the Ahwatukee chapter of Alcoholics Anonymous to hold its weekly meetings at the church campus. And he allowed other fledgling churches to use Mountain View's facilities as their young congregations began taking root. Continuing Mountain View's legacy of spiritual enrichment and community service now falls to Dill, who was 10 years old and growing up in Illinois when the church's first pastor was leading services in Kyrene School. "We have 35 missions," he boasted in an interview, ticking off activities such as Mission Africa, in which the church funds textbooks for children in that country, and the congregation's work with Habitat for Humanity and the Kiwanis Club's Christmas gift program for children in group foster homes, to name a few. It even began hosting an election polling place, something the church hadn't done for years, and has a mission church in Sun Lakes. Dill, who came to Christianity as a young adult after he got married 37 years ago, worked as a police officer in Illinois and an IT specialist before he felt called to Lutheran ministry and enrolled at Wartburg Seminary in Iowa in 2010. He became associate pastor of Mountain View beginning in February of 2024 and was called by the congregation 7 months later to become its senior pastor. Dill not only is well aware of Mountain View's history, but has had some interactions with its own pioneers. Jeff Johnson gave him a tour of the campus not long after he became an associate pastor, and he presided over Arlene Johnson's funeral and that of Reverend Schneider's widow, Shirley, who passed away late last year. These days, Dill, like many leaders of churches in all denominations, is working to grow the congregation back to its pre-pandemic strength of about 1,000 households. Like all churches, the pandemic-driven ban on group gatherings forced churches to resort to virtual services, causing a downward drift in church attendance and involvement. He isn't going to let the hangover from COVID get in his way. "We're going back to our roots, the mission church," he said, hearkening back to the reason Reverend Ken Johnson left Oregon. "We're going back to being the community church, the church for the community," Dill said. "I don't care if you're black, white, Hispanic, gay, straight, Baptist, Episcopal, Catholic, it doesn't matter. We want to be here for the community." That was Pioneer Ahwatukee Church Marks 50 Years. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.